Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Spanners Reddy, and I'm joined by Matt Two Rumpets. Good afternoon, Matt.
And good evening to you, Spanners, as we once again are chronologically correct in our greetings to each other.
Yeah, man. No race this week as well. So a more relaxed new show, a more relaxed pace.
Yeah, well, I mean, relaxed. I don't know, because all of the news that has been fit to cover has been pretty much ignored because of all of the racing all in a row.
And this is where you come to life. It's like, yeah, did you know there was a technical agreement between Ineos and the rear wing of the Toro Rosso in 1472?
Nah, we're going to talk about the fact that Zach Brown's team won Le Mans in the P2, and we're going to talk about flax fiber cockpits for Formula One teams.
At the end, and Le Mans may get a mention near the end, but no race this week, Matt. So I did my typical thing of coming home from my radio show and saying, I'm just going to have a little nap. 3.5 hours later, I awoke ready to do Missed Apex. So I'm feeling very relaxed.
Can it be a nap if it's that long?
It's a nap. It counts as a nap. I'm happy to call it a mega nap, but it's certainly a nap. But no time for us to nap on this show just because there's no race. This is essentially, Matt, our mid-season review. It feels odd because it's, you know, late September. It's the 20th of September, and the races have been coming thick and fast, and we've not really known what races are coming. But I think we have a good idea of how the F1 calendar is going to shake out. I would say that this is mid-season.
Well, I think it is exactly, because I believe we're on for an 18 total races, and I think we've just had the ninth.
Ninth, I think.
Who would have predicted we'd have gotten that many races in, even 4 months ago?
It's been a roller coaster. Let me just take a quick pause to tell you that we are an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed with the kind permission of our better halves. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. You guys don't want to just hear me and Matt prattling on, do you? So let's bring in former journalist and current journalism lecturer, Jules Sagas. Hey, Jules.
Hi, Spanners. Good evening.
We've continued our European theme. We don't just have a token mainland European person, because we had Christian last week and Jules this week. But where are you joining us from, Jules?
I'm joining you guys from the Netherlands, south of Netherlands, to be specific. And looking forward to the show.
Fantastic. And we're also joined by video producer, director and writer, Steve Amy, joining us from Australia. G'day, Steve.
Well, g'day, Spanners. G'day, everybody. How you all going?
And now, for those of you who appreciate the video version, two shout outs to Steve. Not only do you wake up at about 5 o'clock in the morning to come and make sure I'm not being really, really stupid on the show, but you also, from our point of view, we go to bed and then the video magically appears in an edited form when we wake up. You're like the Santa of Missed Apex videos.
Well, yes, that's quite true, but that's the only decent use for time zones that I've ever found in my life. They really ruin our life, but it works in our favour in this instance.
It's strange because Brits and Aussies have always been kind of, you know, cousins in a way. We feel that kind of affinity where you can really insult like your brother or your cousin. But if anyone else gets at them, we'll get quite upset, you know, the ashes being one of those things. But it's so hard normally to communicate when there's that sort of 12-hour difference. But for Mr. Apex, it's worked out wonderfully.
Yeah, I've got to say, I was surprised at how well it worked. When we started this out, I thought, oh dear, this is going to be very difficult. And there are times, I mean, there is only a window of about 2 or 3 hours per day that we're up at the same time. Yes. So if we've got things to say to each other, we've got to make certain we say them then, otherwise it's useless.
Yeah, and one of us is always drunk, so that never helps. One of us has just woken up and the other one's drunk. Brilliant, that is your...
Perfect.
That is your panel for today. Look at this global panel from America. Matt, two rumpets from the Netherlands, Jules Sagas, and from Australia, we have Steve Amy. Of course, I'm your host, Richard Spanners Ready, and I'm sitting in a little blue shed in Bedfordshire, ready to bring you the big dirty news. Big dirty news. Did I just say that I'm coming to you from a little blue bed? I've spent so much of today in bed, Matt, that you know.
Makes sense. Yeah. Although I have to say, perhaps in your honor, they should rename it Shedfordshire.
That's it. So I'm coming to you from a bed in Shedfordshire. There we go. See, told you the news shows were a little bit different. Before we get too relaxed, Matt, what's our first item on the news docket?
Well, there's been a lot of talk about Renault. They have been doing very well. One might say they have a renaissance, given their performance.
And they've also had quite a renaissance as well.
And as a result, everybody's favorite and not the least bit polarizing ex-world champion driver, Fernando Alonso, now suddenly feels like he might want to put in an effort next year when he joins the team, because it turns out he might actually get a podium out of it.
Yeah, so that's an interesting decision for Renault. They've obviously gone for that kind of big ticket, big personality driver to come in. And I think I said at the time when it was announced that kind of felt like, and this is from no inside knowledge or rumors or anything, it felt like the move of, like a CEO trying to make a point. So it was either Abidable saying, hey, no, guys, the F1 part of the company really has ambition. Look, we've got Alonso. Or somebody fighting for the F1 group within Renault. But now it's a reality. 39-year-old Fernando Alonso is coming back to Formula One. He'll be here next year. What's your thoughts on that, Jules?
Every time I read about Alonso, I tend to skip the item, because I was more enthused by the news Renault is turning into Alpine next year than Alonso returning. He's past it. We're over you, Fernando.
Ooh, that is fighting talk. Emails to julesagas@gmail.com. I don't know.
Exactly.
I'm kind of a Alonso fan deep down. I certainly was at the time. He's sort of morphed into not a cartoon villain, but a caricature over the years. I think that period at McLaren where he was understandably upset, there was kind of a mismatch, I think, Jules, between his ego still saying, I'm a world champion, I'm pushing forward, and everybody else increasingly losing hope in that or just assuming that it wasn't going to happen anymore. And I think he sort of somehow unfairly became this F1 bad guy. And I'm not, oh God, I'm going to get yelled at. I'm not sure he's quite the bad guy that you're making out now.
I'm not saying he's a bad guy. I do think he had a sense of entitlement in even his Ferrari days. It was like Ferrari didn't deliver him the car that he needed. And then later on, McLaren and Honda, not at all even. But it always appears that he really collects everything around him to make it work and pretty much downgrades his teammate, and I just feel, are we Is Fernando Alonso really the thing we need in Formula One right now, where we're actually getting into a whole new generation of drivers? Yeah. I mean, Fernando Alonso even makes Sebastian Vettel and Lewis Hamilton seem like pretty young still.
Trump is.
Yeah, well, this feeds back into the original point, because originally he stated, well, I'm going to come back to Formula One, but I'm not really going to be interested till the regulation change. Suddenly, we have Ricciardo and Renault doing well, which, yes, they will be Alpine next year with a very cool new livery. We're all excited about that. And suddenly he's like, oh, well, now maybe I'm interested. And this has caused a problem for Renault. But I'll get to that in a minute, because I think Steve has a point.
Well, mine's not so much a point, but rather a question. And I'll make a point. Firstly, my question is, why are they changing to Alpine? I mean, I understand, you know, the history of the brand and all that sort of stuff.
Cool.
But I would have thought that from a marketing point of view, them pushing Renault would have been a much, you know, more important priority for them. And my second thing, the statement part of this is, isn't it just that Renault as a car manufacturing company are on the edge of, you know, perhaps pulling out of Formula One? We've all speculated for the last 12 months about that. And perhaps Cyril's thought, if we can get hold of someone that is eminently marketable, particularly in the USA, then that helps his case with the Renault management for keeping the racing team going.
Now, that's a great point. That's a great point, Steve, which is that since he left sort of Formula One, he has become a bit more of a name in America, with people going, oh, yeah, no, that's the dude they were talking about from the F1 that came over and did the thing. And yeah, he's cool with his lock of lion hair. He's brilliant. I might look at this Alpine sports car thing. Matt, so I think we've got two distinct threads of chat here. We've got Alonso coming and doing the driver test, and obviously we're wanting to talk about Alpine as well. So let's focus in on Alonso just for a second. Putting him in the young driver test, though, does just seem a little bit off. Like, he's literally stealing track time from baby F1 drivers.
Well, I mean, to be fair, he is a very youthful 39. Something you know something about, I do believe.
Youthful on the outside, not so much on the inside. I'm dying slowly.
But the real problem is that because in their infinite wisdom, they turned down new tires for this season from Pirelli. It was agreed, since the cars weren't changing at all, normally after the last race, there's a young driver's test for a day, and then a couple of days of tire test for the next season. The tires aren't changing in order to save money, because let's face it, we know that earnings will be down this season. They agreed to axe all the extra testing. So the only testing day available to Alonso right now before proper winter testing gets underway before the season is this single young driver's test. So Renault is putting in to try and get him in the door, because now he's interested in being competitive next year instead of just showing up and doing the minimum till he gets a new car that might actually be competitive.
Wait, you know, are you suggesting that he was showing up to get a paycheck next year, and now he's showing up to try and win and get podiums?
Well, if I was trying to provoke controversy, I would absolutely put it that way. But the reality is, if you're Fernando Alonso and you're looking at a Renault that's not super competitive, you're thinking, okay, I'll show up for 2021 and I'll race with no expectation, but just getting back into it. Because he's not been in a Formula One car for more than a little while now.
No, look, it's a reality. Whether you want him in F1 or think he should be back in F1, he is coming back. He's a two-time world champion. I personally believe he's still going to be fast and on it. And looking at our live chat, hello live chat, it's split. It's split between people who are just like almost like indignant with rage that he's coming back taking an F1 seat. But he's also quite a popular guy as well. And I think people can get into their little Alonso echo chambers and assume that everyone hates Alonso or everyone loves Alonso. You know, I think there's a reasonable split there, Matt.
Yeah. And that said, I do believe I saw that their young driver, their Renault Academy driver, Joe, is doing a test in the car. So it's not like they're abandoning the youth, so to speak. But they're faced with a very simple logistical problem. They don't have a place to put him. Last year, Ocon got into the car as soon as he could and got a little extra running. And I think he demonstrates that it's not as easy as you might think to go to a different team after a year out of the sport, jump in the car, and immediately be competitive. I would be surprised if it was all that close, at least for the first 4 to 6 races.
Sure, but he's also got, you know, he's got like 8 days of winter testing. So that would be the time for him to catch up. Also, obviously not always representative if it's cold in Barcelona or whatever, or snow, as I think there was this year, in fact. So maybe, you know, an in-season test would be useful for Fernando Alonso. The most interesting thing that I would like to see that definitely isn't going to happen is for him to turn up on an F1 weekend and do an FP1 session and just take Ricardo's car for an FP1 session. Ricardo's on his way out. So, you know, why not have Alonso go in there going on the radio? Hello, everybody. Oh, this is terrible. Oh, I like this. That's not how Spanish people talk. Yep, that was racist. Sorry. Right. But obviously that's not going to happen. But I think that would be quite cool. And that would be very marketable on Renault's point.
It would be. But the thing is, with all the driver swaps going on, Renault are hardly really the only team in this position. Mm. So we may see some changes with regards to how that test gets carried out, because I'm sure there are more than a few drivers who might wish to get slightly acquainted with their new steeds before the winter testing actually kicks off for real.
Cool. All right. So let's just round off on Alpine. I believe it is Alpine, Jules. That smacks of, to me, and again, I'm guessing, I'm just thinking that, you know, Derek on the Alpine board, he sat there, he's got a seat at the Renault table when they're discussing whether to stay in F1, and they're like, come on, Derek, just sign off on this F1 budget, please. And he's like, well, I could do, but do you know what's been struggling? The Alpine brand. Tell you what, call it Renault Alpine F1 and I'll sign off, and you get Alonso in Alpine sports cars for the whole season. I'm happy, you're happy, let's go. That's what that smacks of to me.
I think the rumors that Renault would pull out have been before the season even started.
Yeah.
I think this is a decent way of them to like not really pull out, but pull their name out.
Oh, hang on. So you think that this is actually a partial withdrawal? I've heard that has limited success from a business point of view.
I think it was actually Joe in his last show who kind of pointed out that it's for now, it's not really, doesn't really make sense to try and sell their cars through F1.
Yeah.
And they have a better suiting product. So, I think that's the case. And, they have been doing so in endurance racing for years. So, yeah.
Yeah, so from my point of view, yeah, I didn't buy my Renault on the strength of a Renault F1 team. I bought the Renault because it was a dependable, like, family SUV for my family to drive around in, and they felt safe and it dependable. It definitely wasn't like an exhilaration purchase. So
yeah, they're always the winner out of the security test, so that's probably why.
There you go. Which doesn't scream F1, but maybe Alpine or Renault will scream F1.
This will save your children's lives.
Sorry, Jules, I bumped over you. Were you saying it's going to save my children's lives?
Yeah, Renaults do.
Well, there you go. That's a great endorsement. I'm going to play the bumper again and pretend I didn't mess up like that. No, you messed up and played the bumper at the wrong time. In fact, we've segued nicely since we've got Steve on here and we've been talking about the driver moves. I think it's a bit of a toss-up between between Renault and McLaren for next season. How are you feeling about your boy Ricardo's move? And yes, I am being racist, assuming that you're a Ricardo fan. All Australians are. Every single Australian loves Ricardo, even though he's secretly evil, like Lord Business off of Lego Movie. We'll find out in due time. But for now, you Aussies all love him.
Oh, yes. He's good. He's a funny man, and he's a better driver than Mark Webber. And I did like Mark Webber, so he's, you know, he's good for us. How do I feel about it? I'm an old McLaren. I mean, I started watching Formula One back in the late 1970s. So I'm a McLaren and Williams fan. I grew up when those guys were, you know, and was watching it when those guys were dominant. So I can't help but admit to being a Williams and McLaren fan. So to have an Aussie driver in a McLaren, for me, particularly when McLaren are now going through a resurgence and beginning to, you know, really do good stuff, I'm stoked. I can't wait till he gets into that McLaren. And yes, it'll take a little while for him to get used to. And they will have Mercedes engines next year, which is another huge plus.
Yep.
So I've got all my fingers and toes crossed. I mean, with Lewis in the sport at the moment and with Max, it's going to be hard for him to win a championship, I think. I think his time's probably run out for that realistically.
Really?
I'd really, really love to see him go up and give him a damn good kick up the bum and make them realize that they're not the only good drivers in the world.
How old is Ricciardo now? Do we know?
Oh, I think he's 34, maybe.
No. Ricardo's not 34. Are we sure? Jules, you're shaking
something
your head.
Something like that. 32, maybe, but he's in his 30s for sure.
Yeah, I thought 30 or 31, I think.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, it is 30. Yeah. So he's still, for an F1 driver, if you're not like a multiple world champion, you're probably not going to be going on super, super deep into your 30s. So that is interesting that Ricardo, I still think of him as like, you know, a 25-year-old. But so if you say that he is probably the complete Ricardo package, he's as Ricardo as he's going to get, and that big ticket front of the grid team never really came, and it's not likely to trumpet. So yeah, I've not really thought of that, is that we are seeing the best of Daniel Ricardo now, and we're going to see him matched up against a rising star, Lando Norris, next year. It's going to be really, really fun to watch.
It is going to be fun to watch. And it came up in the chat room, and I must apologize because there are lots and lots of comments. Someone asked about whether or not McLaren itself was in financial trouble, because they have, after all, mortgaged the family farm, yes, so to speak, with the technology center. But I did read some articles about this, and the general consensus is, in fact, that no, they're not. This is a much that owning your own corporate headquarters is a less financially useful way, and that most corporations do what McLaren is in the process of doing, which is they are going to sell it and then long-term lease it, which frees up a bunch of capital for them to spend.
Right.
Also, apparently they have been happily ring-fenced, which I never understand why that word gets used, but whatever, ring-fenced from whatever ailments the automobile side of the company might be having.
Okay.
So they have a fair bit of cash, and they're supposedly walled off from any other troubles from any other McLaren divisions. So actually, it looks a bit rosy for them. It looks like they might have a bit extra to spend, like they might be able to hit the actual cost cap going into 21 into 22, which is, of course, what all of the teams were trying to position themselves to do. And that might actually also even go back and explain the Alpine branding, because they might be able to bring in more marketing money and spend it that way, and thus help the team hit that budget when they really need to, which is going into 22 when all the regulations change for real.
So just to answer a question there from Lydia Cruz, where are they moving? Right, so they're not moving, but it was widely reported that this was like a bad thing, that McLaren were having to sell their technology center, their headquarters, when in fact, you know, they're not moving, they're staying there. It's just that it's being leased back to them. So if that makes more financial sense, and that's common practice, I'll believe them. With the ring fencing, I think that probably is a policy decision. So they've got reassurances that F1 money is not going to be siphoned off to save, to prop up other areas, so they can be confident in their budget. However, were the whole parent company as a whole to collapse, that would still affect them. The ring fencing is just a policy of saying, act as if you're going to have that budget, go forward. Don't act as if we're suddenly going to take 20 million off you. So it could look rosy for Mercedes. Who else is going to be up in that top budget category? In fact, well, Jules, what were you going to say first?
Well, if we're talking about McLaren and things are looking rosy, let's not forget they are running the Mercedes engine from next year on, which potentially puts Ricciardo in maybe even the best car he's ever driven in F1 since his Red Bull days weren't that shiny or rosy when it was powered by the Renault V6 engines.
So at the moment, I don't know. I'm trying to think, Matt. How do we think the Renault engines have stacked up this year? Is the consensus that it's Mercedes and then kind of Honda and then Renault slightly under? Has that been the consensus this year for engine power?
I think Honda and Renault are in a similar place performance wise. I think I might give a slight edge to Renault actually at the moment. I think Honda is more on edge with reliability. They're still working out the kinks. They've done a massive job because considering how late they entered the game, like if we were judging them, it would be like, oh yeah, my 14-year-old is now with the 16-year-old. So like actually they're doing a great job, but they're still a 14-year-old versus 16-year-old. So yeah. I think Renault is on absolute just performance, maybe slightly ahead. What's interesting to me, the real battle is going to be between McLaren with Mercedes and Racing Point with Mercedes.
Yeah.
That's going to be fascinating to watch, I think.
I don't know. My instinct is that pound for pound, McLaren is doing a better job than Racing Point this season. Pound for pound, i.e. in engine terms, not in financial terms. So I'm expecting McLaren to kind of sail past. But what the non-Mercedes teams are still having to do is make compromises on their aero package. So if you've got that little bit less power, you can't bolt on all the downforce you can. And it feels like McLaren Mercedes are going to be in a situation where they have the funds and the experience and the technology and the wind tunnels and everything to take advantage of that extra power to be able to bolt downforce on and be competitive in a way that perhaps Racing Point aren't quite to that level. But Renault are still going to be having to make compromises next year, Matt. I don't know if this is a bit of a off the top of my head, but you know, Renault is still having to make compromises for their engine this year, and they've performed better over the last couple of seasons when they've had their low downforce package out.
Right. So if I'm not misremembering, I do believe that Pat Fry has moved there. They've got Alain Permain. And what they said, and this intrigued me, was that sweet spot they talked about with their low downforce package. They have now found with their performance at Mugello. Yeah. And as a result, they are feeling very confident. And if they have sorted that out, it's worth remembering that the Renault engines at the end of the cycle of the V8 was absolutely worth every penny that was being paid by Red Bull for them. They were not more powerful ultimately than the Mercedes engine, but they were drivable in a way with the aerodynamics of the car that made that a very, very difficult package to beat. So I'm willing to chuck Renault in there for next year. There will be some aerodynamic changes to be considered. And even Ferrari supposedly has an upgraded engine coming that might benefit Haas and Alfa Romeo, because I always have to think about which Alfa it is because of my age and stuff like that.
Yeah, I know. I heard about that. Ferrari are installing a second hamster in that power unit. Right. So I'm gonna be more optimistic than you guys are being about McLaren Mercedes. And obviously, this is wild speculation. The old adage of you can't win as a customer team, I think, has been massively overstated in the hybrid era. So I think that McLaren Mercedes could go and pinch race wins, could go and pinch a title at some point in the next era. I simply don't believe the mantra that a customer team isn't allowed to win or would be held back. There are regulations that say you have to get the same engine. You have to have the same engine modes. Now you can only use one engine mode throughout the whole weekend. And I think those days are coming to an end. And I, especially with the budget cap, if Mercedes have agreed to that, we're looking at a changing dynamic over the next few years of Mercedes' relationship with F1 anyway. I think any of the customer teams post-budget cap will be able to go and go and take it to the front teams, Matt. So I'm going to be much more optimistic than even the most ardent McLaren fan for the next two seasons.
Well, I don't know if I would go quite that far. The 2022 regulations will be interesting, but if you're a team like Mercedes that technically has unlimited resources right now, I've already put a fair amount of work into that. And if I have less resources, I've not put as much work into that. It has been brought up in the chat room is an interesting point. It's also very much about understanding your own car and how well you do.
Mm.
And I would say that McLaren absolutely has that over Racing Point at the moment because it's a new design for them.
Oh, by the way, I was just saying like they could take it to Mercedes. I'm not predicting that they will. But this sort of gets us to a very short, I think, news item about Ineos, Matt. So let's cover this in fairly short order. But this alludes to what I was saying, that perhaps we're seeing a changing relationship between Mercedes and Formula One. I think the stripping of the budget cap takes away Mercedes' biggest advantage, perhaps. Like, they were so much bigger. You know, maybe even a limit in staffing numbers in the future could come in as well. But they had such an advantage over the field in budget and personnel that they were always going to be dominant. If it turns out that Mercedes end up taking a bit of a backseat, maybe even become just an engine supplier, I say just an engine supplier, I'm imagining you could make a fortune in Formula One by being an engine supplier to four teams and having everybody want your engines and outbid each other for them. But that would certainly be a level of involvement that would keep Mercedes brand in Formula One. Look, powered by Mercedes, we keep winning, even if it's a McLaren Mercedes, even if it's an Aston Martin Mercedes.
Yes, well, I would generally say that Formula One takes fortunes and they don't make fortunes. But I think if we're going to talk about Mercedes, the opposite might be true. And I love to draw often the analogy of no limits poker. They showed up,
yep.
They won, and every time they won, their pile of chips was bigger, and then that made it easier. In fact, they have, at this point, attracted so many sponsors to their team and done so many side deals and gotten so much marketing exposure. Mm. Apparently, the actual input of Mercedes proper, and this is sort of excluding the engines a little bit, like not considering Brixworth, but just Brackley, was only like 30, 33 million pounds last year.
Okay.
The overall spin was 330 to win. But between sponsors and value and everything like that, they really are only putting in a pittance for what they're getting. So it was kind of interesting to see that this other company, Ineos, buying in and being made a big deal of, they're buying in maybe Lauda shares, yeah. Maybe Toto, maybe Mercedes Corporate is selling some. We don't know what the exact outline of the deal is yet. But it goes back to that same question we asked earlier. Where is Mercedes really going to wind up in a few years? Is Ineos going to take over, as has already been posited? And what is Toto going to do? Because he's being very coy.
Yeah.
About the role he's going to play in the team. And let's not forget that I don't think Lewis Hamilton has a contract yet either. So a little bit of drama there for you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I mean, I'd be tempted to go off on a big one about what's Lewis going to do? Who might take over from Lewis? But they have a history of signing late deals and everything being fine. The likely jumping points for Lewis Hamilton within F1 appear to have gone. Like Aston Martin would be the only juicy looking project, I think, for next season. And I'm assuming that this is next season we're talking about. At this point, we can be reasonably comfortable that Lewis Hamilton is going to be a Mercedes driver next year. So I think we'll save the Wolf Hamilton speculation for another show, Matt.
And I think that's reasonable because we don't know where it's going to go. But Wolf especially. I think not so much Hamilton because we all know that Hamilton's real deal is he wants to win more championships than anybody, which if I was that good at something, I would pretty much have that as my goal too.
Mostly
to get out of bed at a reasonable hour and at least shower once a week. You know,
I would keep winning until people were sick of me. I would keep winning until everyone hated me. That's what I would do. Steve?
Hasn't that happened already?
yeah, maybe. All right, let's move on. hang on. Let's check my stereotypical tropes. Steve supporting Ricardo, check. We've got a Dutch guy. Right, let's talk about Verstappen, Jules. Now then, You are not Orange Army. You are not a Verstappenite, Max Fossey. Why? Are you just being difficult, Jules? Are you just going against the crowd? Are you one of these people who says, oh, I don't even own a TV. Oh, I don't like them. Jeans are common. No, are you one of those?
Two reasons. One of them being when Max Verstappen entered the scene, I was still covering Formula One as a profession. So I had some kind of, you know, professional distance. But the second is I like personalities. And I like Formula One drivers that represent more than just being a driver. And Max Verstappen just doesn't really appeal to me in that way. That he has a big mouth and he's talkative, but only about the Formula One and the racing, and doesn't really nobody really knows what he's about besides that. And there are some drivers that are more outspoken and share more views on live, etc. And I just think that's more appealing. It adds to the whole story of Formula One.
Right. And I must immediately bring up, in all fairness, how old is he again?
He's still very young. Yeah.
So it's not a surprise to me. He doesn't really have a lot else to talk about because I don't think he's been alive long enough to have a lot else to talk about. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but you know, I got a 15-year-old and let me tell you.
That's true. That's totally true. But when you hear and read and listen about how Max has been brought up, life has always been pretty much racing, and then racing. So you can't really blame him for not. It's an exaggeration, but it's like Michael Jackson, who got pulled out of life at 4 years old and started just recording in the studios. It's kind of the same thing.
Wow, Steve, the Michael Jackson of Formula One.
Well, yes, I've got to agree with that. The reason why we don't know a lot about Max, is really because he hasn't done a lot outside of racing ever since he's been 4 or 5 years old. His father's focus has been on turning him into a Formula One championship. So he probably hasn't had enough time to develop opinions and interests and things, you know, outside of that tiny little world that he inhabits.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I get what Jules is saying. You know, we only have 20 Formula One drivers. You know, we kind of want to learn everything about them and consume everything about them. You know, Lando Norris, Daniel Ricciardo, they're all much obliging. Lewis Hamilton gives us certainly lots of headlines as this kind of glamour megastar. I'm wearing, what was he wearing? He was wearing like a tartan smock, it looked like, on a scooter.
Oh my God.
And I could have guessed, Steve, that you didn't like that look that Kimi Raikkonen mocked him for on Instagram. But that's fashion forward. If I could wear that and look cool and have people take photos of me, I definitely would. But I can't, because everything makes me look like a giant potato at the moment. Curse you, COVID. And of course, COVID has had other worse effects, but that's the ballooning. That's my worst one, Steve.
I think part of it is also just the times that we live in. I mean, back before the internet, what did people know about drivers, really? If you wanted to know something about drivers, you had to go and buy the magazines and read whatever articles to give you some background. These days, you can just go search online and you get, you know, the whole lock, stock and barrel in one, you know, quick hit. So the fact that people, you know, are wanting all this information on drivers is a very new thing, really, and being able to get it, of course, is a very new thing. So, you know, I guess we as consumers are learning as much as the industry is learning, you know, how to cope with all of that extra information and all of that kind of stuff.
So just to quickly divert to the Kimi Lewis thing, because obviously that's come up in the chat room. I didn't see that as all that mean-spirited from Kimi. I saw that as like posting a fashionable photo of a handsome, successful sportsman isn't really that much of an insult, you know, when you're comparing him to a very popular, but a driver with a lifestyle that probably wouldn't do all that well in Formula One today, which was, of course, Mike Hunt, and saying, you know, look at how F1 drivers have evolved. I didn't see that as a mean jab. I saw that as quite a funny jab, because Kimi is more of, you know, that kind of Hunt-esque type driver. Yeah. But by Hunt standards, a Raikkonen would be, you know, would be a choir boy still. So,
Lewis and Kimi would have to be friends, wouldn't they? They've been racing together and against each other for 20 years or more. So, yeah, he's taken the mickey out of Lewis a little bit, but I don't think it was mean-spirited at all. I think it was quite funny.
But if we go back to Verstappen again, briefly, Jules. I know that like a lot of your countrymen now will be screaming defence at him. Obviously, you can't deny that he is a good driver, but perhaps starting to show a bit of frustration, actually, at Red Bull.
Yeah.
James Hunt, sorry, why have I been saying Mike Hunt? James Hunt, so sorry, James Hunt. Steve, edit in the whole time.
Could you repeat that, please, for the Mike Hunt. Totally Safe
Mike
Work live
Hunt.
Stream?
Mike Hunt, definitely said it correctly, even if it was the wrong name. Sorry, go on.
I've known three people called Mike Hunt in my life. I can't figure out what their parents were up to.
I don't know why I've done that.
Let's save you spinners and just start answering your question.
Do it.
Of course, he's one of the best drivers on the grid, most talented, obviously. That wasn't the question. But as his Orange Army is very vocal, of course, there's major disappointment of his two last races, DNF. 3 out of 9 races now saw the finish flag. So it's a bit in the news that it's a bit of a story right now. Like Max should lose his frustration and keep going, and Honda promises they again solved the problems just as they did after Monza. So I sometimes wonder, like, how much patience does Max himself have with Honda, with Red Bull, because he's been touted. Youngest world champion ever, which I think isn't possible anymore. But it's his fifth year in Formula One, I think, maybe even fifth, I think. And time is ticking, and there's a new generation behind him already.
Yes, that's right.
Coming up. So he needs to get the right circumstances around him, which isn't that easy. Or I fear for him. He's not just going to be that world champion like people over here just kind of assumed. He's going to be a world champion someday, sure.
Matt?
Well, I still have, based on what I've seen right now, I feel like he has, of the contenders right now, the best possible chance. What's interesting to me is you ask how much patience he'll have with Red Bull and Honda. Mm. And I think the question for him will be, there is exactly right now one team that he could move to that would give him a better chance. And I don't see that team being interested in hiring him until their current 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, however many times world champion decides to head off for greener pastures to do something else.
Well, that'll be the hope.
I don't think.
Yeah, that'll be the hope, won't it, for Verstappen's fans, is that because Hamilton hasn't signed his contract yet, that maybe they would want him to move. Well, what do you reckon, Jules? Would Verstappen fans want him to go and replace Lewis Hamilton? Huge shoes to fill, but you have to think that he would easily beat Bottas.
No brainer. Of course, they would want him to. And beat Hamilton. I think most of them, and I don't think that's just his fans, think he has a real shot of beating Lewis Hamilton. There were already people. I think it was on the Sky television coverage, claiming he's the best driver on the grid right now, but just not in the best car. But that he's matured so much.
Yeah.
I always have a slight doubt with him whether he can really pull in a world championship when it's really on the line, because he's always the hunter, the chaser right now. And when he wins, it's fantastic, because it's always not on the odds.
Yes.
And what happens if he gets into a title fight with the pressure? And we all know he can be a bit tempered, so to say. Can he manage a title fight? And I would really like to see that.
I think people were assuming that we would have seen Verstappen in a title fight by now, Matt. And so, you know, and we haven't. And the longer it goes on, the more he kind of, not morphing into Alonso, but into that same kind of vein where he can be the cheeky chappy that it's all against the odds. And when you have good days, big days, it's huge. It was unexpected. His par, if he wants to shoot a par, is third. You know, if he wants to sink a birdie, beat Bottas as well. But when he gets that race win, it's an eagle. The crowd goes wild. We don't know what happens when he is when his par is first every race. Drumbeat, bring it home. Hamilton's done that 7 times. Can Verstappen do it? Personally, I think we would be able to do it. But it's certainly, you know, it's a big test.
Yeah, he does present the mentality of being someone who, given the lead, will maintain it and be comfortable and happy. I mean, I know we've had this discussion about like being in the lead versus chasing someone. Right now, he's the chaser. And that's an easy psychological position to be in. I'm chasing you down. That's easier than I'm leading. I'm in front and everyone has to come catch me.
Yeah.
But I will also pose, if I'm Verstappen and I go, let's say Hamilton breaks a leg.
Yes.
And, yeah. And is out. Is going to be, he breaks it in such a way that he's going to be out for half of next year and all of the following year. And Max has a special get out of jail free card and he goes to Mercedes. Let's just posit that for the sake of making our show even longer than it probably already will be.
Yeah.
What is everyone going to say when and if he wins that first world championship?
Yeah. Well, like it's
the car.
Yeah.
It's not him. So like how eager would he be to go to Mercedes at this point?
I'm going to really push like the Max Fosse side of it here by pointing out to you that he is second in the world championship over a Mercedes car. And Bottas, I don't think Bottas is the mug that he sometimes is being made out to look like. If Lewis Hamilton was to go break his leg now and miss the rest of the season and Mercedes didn't quite get the right driver pick, say they put Hülkenberg in there, who, as we know, is cursed to never get a podium, but he can spend the rest of his life being a handsome F1 driver with all the perks that come with that. Verstappen could win the championship from here. If Lewis Hamilton doesn't race again, whoever you put in the Mercedes car isn't guaranteed to beat a Verstappen-Red Bull combination. So let's be clear. Verstappen is outdriving the Red Bull's current place in F1. Now, as it happens, I think Red Bull is out-engineering the engine they have at the moment and doing fantastically well as well. But Verstappen is beating one of the Mercedes cars, which also tells you that Lewis Hamilton is probably outdriving that car as well. So I don't know, Matt. I think in your scenario, Verstappen just stays where he is and can deliver a championship from Red Bull. So I'm going a bit Max Fosse there.
Which I think is fair.
I'm being corrected in the chat room. He's currently third. He was second for a bit. Oh, sorry. Okay, my bad. But he's pretty close. He's 25 points off. God, sorry, that's terrible.
What would we say? In with a shout.
Yeah, that ruins my whole point. But yeah, he's in with a shout. Yeah, sorry. Well done, guys.
He's in with a shout. He's delivered a race win. He's delivered some second places. He is capable, given the chance, of doing it.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to bring it home by saying, if I'm Max, I'm not sure I want to go to Mercedes and win a championship. I might want to go to Ferrari and win a championship.
Yeah.
But if I go to Mercedes, everyone's just going to say exactly what they say about Lewis now is it's the car, but at least Lewis won in a different car first.
Okay. Let me walk back because I'm embarrassed with my mistake. I would say let's put Jules's, was it 33% DNF?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's factor that into the equation to rescue me and pretend that I was saying spiritually second in the championship. That's what I was saying. The communication has been very clear on this topic. Jules, round off Verstappen for us.
Yeah, well, I think your point is very valid, whether you had the percentages or his position right. He's out-driving the Red Bull and he's, morally outperforming Bottas. I think his disappointment and his frustration isn't solely not finishing the last two races. It goes back further to last winter when they really, really believed they had the car to take the fight to Hamilton, to Mercedes. And again, it hasn't panned out like that. And I think that's he's got no place to go. But it's just a repeat. It's a cycle that keeps repeating every off season, and so
there's always the Red Bull hype, isn't there?
Mid-season. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Good. Thank you very much, Jules. Where can people find you online? You are because I've worked very hard to get your name pronounced correctly. It's Jules Segers, and it's S E G E R S.
S-double-E.
Oh, there we go. That's too many E's. S-double-E-G-E-R-S. Yeah. Are you Jules Sager's F1 on Twitter?
Without the F1.
Oh, just Jules Sager's. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
Did I suppose you're a full-time lecturer now, teaching the next generation of baby journos to come up. Could you tell them all to not constantly go on about F1 being boring if they want to have an F1 career?
You'd be surprised how many of those kids are actually into Formula One and trying to get into the business.
I'm sure we would be. Thank you very much, Jules. All right, let me just talk to you guys for a little moment. Matt, obviously, you will be aware there was quite a Twitter storm on Tuesday and Wednesday. I was at home scratching my butt, sitting there watching 30 Rock, having a day off, and then my phone exploded to the extent that I now have a separate Project Media phone. So I now have a separate handset that was sitting in my drawer. I've put a SIM card in it, and that is my phone. I have to now deliberately check social media messages and emails rather than them being in my pocket. Such was the storm.
Really? I had no idea anything of the sort had happened. And what day was this?
Tuesday and Wednesday.
Isn't that like last year in social media time anyway? Why are we even talking about this?
Yes, of course. Of course, the whole social media world has moved on. But just, you know, people have been asking me why I was not talking about the comments on social media from Joe Saywood and, you know, the subsequent Twitter storm. And I just, you know, as I said on the Remain Indoors podcast, join us live for the Remain Indoors podcast, where we say things that aren't about F1. The reason I hadn't said anything was mainly because I hadn't said anything. It was almost its own thing. It's like, well, if I haven't yet chosen to say anything, that's the reason. I just haven't.
Well, yeah, at least publicly, which is an entirely different thing to privately.
So just to assure you guys, you know, we have talked about things extensively as a panel, as a project, and I've had lots of conversations with Joe as well. And those conversations have taken part as people who work together and collaborate together would normally do, you know, in a grown-up option. DM is always an option. Email is always an option. But also, I just felt like there was enough people saying things on Twitter. You know, was my hot take really needed? And I was thinking about, what is my social contract with you guys as listeners? Is it that you want my hot take every 5 seconds? Or is our contract that I will sit here and give you some background listening for exactly 60 minutes on a weekly basis for you to have as some Formula One background listening? And in return, you don't mind too much if I put some ads on the shows, and then this can all make up part of my freelance working week. You know, you don't necessarily think that my following is there, Matt, you know, for me to like jump up and down and say things like, well, for example, why are we deliberately doing Brexit, which is what our worst enemies would wish on us, but we're doing it on purpose. For example, you know, that people don't really think of me as like that hot take guy. So that's why I didn't kind of add my fuel to the fire.
Well, and it's reasonable. I mean, honestly, at the point I even woke up and looked at my phone, there was like 9 million comments. 37,000 things had been said back and forth by the principals and everyone who jumped on the, and I think your reaction is, and please don't take this the wrong way, remarkably mature.
Oh, right. Old. You mean old?
Yeah, I do. It's the 40 talking. You just, the question of, what, if anything, can I add to this conversation is an entirely legitimate one when you get to be our age.
Yeah, exactly. So with the big fire that was raging, I simply didn't have anything constructive to add. But just know, we have had all the conversations as a team that have been required. And also, you know, when people are that angry and that ferocious, Matt, all I could do was lose. Whatever comment I make, whatever side I was perceived or stand I was perceived to take, the thing that was going to suffer is, if you're the mummy and I'm the daddy, is our little precious baby of Missed Apex podcast. Because whatever we say or whatever we do, someone's going to go, "Ah, that was too harsh," or "that was not harsh enough," or "it was harsh, but it was on the wrong side." And poor little baby Missed Apex was not going to get enough milk. And I felt sad about that.
Yeah. Well, and to be fair, as a collaborative project, oftentimes it is difficult to engineer a statement from the project versus a statement from the individual. And it's very easy for an individual statement to be confused with a statement from the project.
Yeah. And there's very little room for nuance either. So that's enough of that.
But to be fair.
Oh, you've done it again, Matt. I said, that's enough of that. I pressed the button. It went da, 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 da. And then go on then. I won't play the bumper again.
I think if we were going to say anything, I think your tagline for the end of the show was probably the most appropriate thing.
Work hard, be kind, have fun. Now that's worth a button press. I'll tell you who works hard. People who go out on location and film stuff, like Steve Amy. Film crews, film producers, broadcasters, people that put together live output. It's blinking hard work. The hours are insane. And being away from home is a big part of that as well. Much like what the Formula One drivers are facing at the moment. How have you seen the last 9 races with triple headers? Too much fatigue? How have you seen it?
It's been difficult, particularly here, because the races are on late at night. So, I mean, it wouldn't be quite so bad if the races are on during the day. That'd be fine. But you've got 3 weekends in a row where you're staying up till 1 o'clock in the morning and getting up, for me anyway, getting up 3 hours later to do the podcast. You look forward to the weekend where you can actually get a decent night's sleep, if you know what I mean. So 3 in a row is hard. 1 every second week is fine. I have no problem with that. And I think people have got to get on with their own lives and, you know, their families and all of those sorts of considerations. So personally, I would much prefer that it was just every 2 weeks as per normal. But given the dearth of racing that we had earlier in the year, I'm not complaining because at least we've got something to watch.
Jules, what do you reckon? I started to suspect that even viewers were starting just to get a little bit of fatigue with that run. You know, it's a special situation, but boy, was it intense. So many races being thrown at you.
Yeah. You know what I think viewers miss is the anticipation, the slight disappointment of entering a weekend, thinking, oh, what am I going to do on Sunday? And there's no race. What am I going to do? And now there's pretty much every Sunday there's a race. And that longing, that boredom of not having a Grand Prix weekend, me personally, I sometimes miss that. But maybe that's just me being old. I'm from the days of Friday morning pre-qualifying sessions to live up to. But I think Steve's right in that sense. We should be happy with every race we get. But the exclusiveness of Formula One on television and all that, and that's gone a bit with all these triple headers. But maybe I'm just an old romantic.
I don't know. It's Christmas every day, isn't it, Trumpets? I've loved it, but I found it intense. As people who are covering it as well and producing content, I mean, we'll produce content anyway. We did it for 7 months of no races.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll be on the mic producing podcasts anyway. If F1 completely stopped running, we'd do it about lobster racing, wouldn't we, off the coast of Bournemouth. We would do a full...
We might even talk about Le Mans.
No, I don't want to. It's an F1 podcast. Do your races that are quite cool but far too long podcast by yourself, and I will promise I will subscribe to it. The fatigue, I think... We felt, though, as content creators, where we go, actually, we can't even fit in of our normal news cycle. So we're quite used to having race, talk about a bit of F1 news, catch up on all the goings on, have arguments. Like we're so used as content creators to having to pull content out and go, right, let's deep dive into that subject and pull like a driver special or a tire special. You know, we've not even had room to breathe there. So I'm sort of missing the room to breathe we had as part of a normal season. I'm not complaining, but like Jules said, you know, there are things we used to do as part of our ritual when we were in those gaps.
Yeah, and it is a bit worrisome when you have so many races in a row. And then like I look and I'm like, news show, and I'm like, what even is a news show? What did I used to do? I can't even recall anymore how we did the news shows. Mm. You know, you sort of like you get out of practice, but there was a very well-established cycle, and it was easy for us and comfortable to ride it. And it's already being brought up in the chat room, and I think is worthwhile, is what are we going to do? Because we all know that 25 races is the goal. So we are going to have more back-to-back weekends, but everyone's talking about triple headers. I don't think we'll see as many triple headers, but I think we'll see one race, a week off, and then a double header and a week off, and then one race and a week off, and then a double header to make the numbers. And then probably, like, we might see a triple header going into summer break, and we might see, depending, we might see one like right at the end of the season. But Red Bull has come out with some interesting ideas based on the fact that we have been able to add all these new races in and see all these new venues, which I'm still very excited about.
I think from a fan's point of view, the new tracks, etc., they have been very welcoming. On the other hand, the triple headers, as a fan, the non-Grand Prix weekends, the two-week breaks between races, it gives you this sense of a craving or longing for a race, but also, ooh, are my team or is my driver going to find something to close the gap to the one he's chasing or fighting for the title with? And now it's just poof, 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 race after race after race, and you just kind of sense like, it's going to be the same after again and again, because there's no development time. It's just, you know, it's just change the venue, but it's going to be pretty much the same again. And I think as a fan, you need that hope, like, oh, maybe down the factory they're going to find something and it's going to be totally different next time.
And by the time a race rolled around, I would like almost have memorized the championship table. Here, I made the embarrassing gaffe of saying that Verstappen was second. And in my mind, I'm sure he was outperforming Bottas enough, but obviously then he's had the DNFs and stuff like that and a few suboptimal results. So I don't memorize the championship table before every race. I haven't been watching every single practice session, because when it's a two-week break or two weekends off in between, when it gets to Friday practice, I'm desperate to consume it. When it's every week, I'm like, I can tune in for qualifying. I'll catch up the rest on Twitter.
Yeah, well, as Mark Greenhow points out in the chat, we are not always just ourselves, and we may occasionally have to engineer reasons to have the time to watch the races, because our families are also getting a bit tired of the weeks in a row spent consuming our favorite thing.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's a challenging thing. Triple headers are hard. I can't imagine outside of the circumstances, the particular circumstances, that they would really want to schedule very many of them.
Okay.
But the point is, how much is not quite too much? That's what I think Liberty is trying to hit.
I think we've pushed the limit of how much F1 we're willing to consume in a short space of time. So it's certainly been a good test, and I'm sure they've got test groups out there. From a Formula One point of view, I get the feeling that they're going to be pushing for like 25, 26 races, which means it's going to be triple headers, and that there will be triple headers coming up, and they work and they can physically do it. If that means there's more money in the pot, then you're going to need to squad rotate. And it's what happened to British teams when the Champions League started. And I'm sure the same in Europe as well. And they had to bring in squad rotation, and you started having to have much bigger squads. And then suddenly the League Cup or the FA Cup, that's where you'd start playing the kids, you know? So you might have to just start looking at your crew and saying, well, we'll have the very best mechanics out with us at the car wrecking circuits, you know, at the street circuits, if that's the one that breaks the cars. And we'll have to have more staff and a bit of squad rotation within a cost cap. I don't know how that works. But from a fan point of view, I don't know. I've enjoyed it. Wife's not complained too much. So let's see what happens in 2021. But as far as 2022 goes, Steve, let's get your old school opinion. You've been watching Formula One since 1954, since it started, let's just say. and we're going to see some old school tracks popping up. So let's start getting some opinions on some of the new to Formula One. I say inverted commas new, sort of new to most viewers, Steve. Perhaps starting with, you know, we've got Tuscany, Imola, that's coming up. We're going to have Portimao, of course, and the Nürburgring Grand Prix circuit, which I'm excited for. What do you reckon? How are they holding up, or how do you think they'll hold up?
I think it's brilliant. I think the new tracks bring a new level of interest for, you know, viewers that have, you know, perhaps, yeah, you know, got into the sport in the last few years. personally, Mugello, what a brilliant track. I mean, it's been a long time since I went sim racing, but in the days when I had my Xbox One and was, you know, doing that sort of stuff, Monza was my favorite track. And it was brilliant to see it back on the real, you know, with Formula One cars running around it. And the one thing for me was I didn't realize how hilly it was because the sim games don't actually show you the rise and fall. And it's beautifully picturesque and a great track. And we had a great race there. Portimao, the same thing. I don't think they've ever had a race there. They've done a season of testing back in 2006 or seven, a few days of testing there, I think. But I'm really looking forward to that. And, of course, Imola. Well, Imola's had Formula One cars at it before, had rather a checkered history, but nonetheless is a good track, although it'll be interesting to see how it performs with this new era of cars. The last time they had cars there, they were V8s or 10s, but it was in the non-hybrid era. So that will be interesting to see how the track handles that. But I have no problem with the tracks. And the other good one, of course, is going to be Turkey with the two variations that they're going to run there. That's going to be an interesting comparison.
Now then, Steve, what's that, the two variations of the Turkish Grand Prix?
Yeah, there's the normal Turkish Grand Prix track, and then isn't the proposal that they would run a second Grand Prix in the squarer,
That's
almost oval shape thing?
That's Bahrain. So they're going to do that in Bahrain.
Oh, Bahrain. Yes. Sorry. Yeah, wrong place. I apologize.
Yeah. That will be interesting as well. I think that its ovalness has been somewhat overstated. But yeah, certainly be interesting to see them go back to Turkey. I worry a little bit about a Nürburgring. It's a great track. Great track. And Imola as well. You know, these are good motor racing tracks. Nürburgring, just from the top of my head, I'm struggling to visualize it, but is the straight going to be sort of quite short? I think that's quite a short straight. I don't know if I'm imagining that. It's a short straight. It is into a big wide hairpin, so that might be a lot of fun as well. So we could see some interesting racing there. I think there's a few error generators too. What are you looking forward to, Jules?
Nürburgring, not so much for the track indeed, but for the weather conditions. It's usually when everyone was there, it was always kind of Spa-esque crazy, and it could be very interesting from that aspect. Imola, because there's just so much heritage, and there's been some great races. But I share Steve's opinion. It doesn't sound promising what the people are saying about it now, that it's going to be a procession, but we'll see. I think the most exciting thing about all these new tracks is, apart from Turkey, they're non-Herman Tilke tracks, and I'm not a Tilke basher per se.
No.
But I think it's just a nice diversion from what we already have and know the last couple of years. And I mean, you saw it in Mugello. Imola, as Steve said, it has great ups and downs, and it's just nice to go back into time, really, and see the current cars in your childhood memories tracks.
I am looking forward to the tracks I don't know, so I'm looking forward to seeing Portimao, and I'm looking forward to seeing Imola because I only have like really shady memories of it in my mind from being a kid, and it's all associated, of course, with Senna and Ratzenberger. But recently, we did it on our iRacing series, and it was glorious. It was a really good flowing track. Obviously, the feel will be, you know, if it's narrow, and the straight is reasonably long, I think. So you might get some, you know, a Mugello style track where you can overtake at least that one point. You can have very good racing as long as you have an overtaking point that doesn't gum up the action, give you too many trails. Jules, then Matt.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, and I think a race isn't only good or great when there's lots of overtaking, and if there's fighting. And I mean, a Monza race, the only overtake after the red flag was Sainz passing Stroll, but the race is now lauded as, oh, that was an awesome race. Was this the greatest race of the decade? So I think we shouldn't get too hung up about that just yet. And I think the cool thing about Portimao is, like Imola, it's also really shaped to the landscape it's built at. So it's not carved into whatever spot they wanted a track. They really saw the place, thought this would be cool for a track, and they got someone, some architect actually, that wasn't even a track designer, to just like really shape the track into the landscape. Cool. So I'm really looking forward.
Yeah.
All the racers on television or in the media that have raced there, they are really excited for this race.
Trumpets.
Yeah, well, Red Bull was out recently talking about the fact that we are going to these new tracks. A lot of the reason we are going to these new tracks is because we don't have audiences available to buy tickets. So Formula One is in effect renting the circuit to put their races on, which is what allows them to put it on. Red Bull has come in and said, hey, you know what? It's kind of fun to go to these new circuits. Not all of them will be able to afford a yearly place on the Rota, but maybe we have like an invitational style championship where every other year we go to one of these that can pony up the money. And the other thing that's coming up, and you mentioned Imola, is important to note, that Imola is only going to be a two-day weekend.
Yes.
It will not be a three-day weekend. Yeah. So it's also possible that we could see Liberty making deals for two-day weekends with certain circuits where they then have to pay less money because they don't get the Friday running that allows the other promoters to sell more tickets across the whole of the weekend.
And as an exciting perk for joining our Mist Apex iRacing series, we have lined up with the Formula One calendar. So if you would like to race with us on iRacing, if you are already an iRacing subscriber and a listener of this show, come and race the likes of me and Matt and Kyle and Alex. I think Brad's going to be there as well. There's some great racers, but there's also some quite corporate racers. So more of a kind of military medium. If you're reasonable and can get around the track without crashing, you can come and race me and Matt. If you're an alien, you can race Alex and Kyle. But if you are very casual, there's a nice battle always towards the back of the grid as well. As long as you're polite and don't ram people off, you're more than welcome with us. Go to mistapexpodcast.com/iRacing. Come and join us. There's a sub of £4 because iRacing has a subscription and paper content model, and we broadcast it. So we need to give the commentators the content, and we need to give Steve the content as well so that we can produce, you know, a nice live stream of us all racing as well. And it's a fantastic evening, Matt. When we did our last season, people loved competing and they loved watching it as well.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. The commentary is first rate. It's some of the best esports commentary I have heard.
No, Chris Stevens. It's the best esports commentary. It is the best esports commentary, and Chris Catman Turner is his Martin Brundle.
Well, to be fair, I know Jack Nicholls, so I didn't want to like really just diss him, if you know what I mean.
He does do esports. No, Chris Stevens is better than Jack Nicholls. There, I said it. And Steve Amy's Video Productions is the best.
Second to none.
It's the best esports coverage there is. Esports doesn't deserve Steve. So we're looking forward to that 3rd of October and 31st of October. You can either email us mistapexpodcast@gmail.com or mistapexpodcast.com/iRacing to get involved. Let's finish quickly by talking about Sochi. Steve, I'm a cheerleader of F1. But I never get excited about the Sochi Grand Prix coming up. It seems to be a track designed to just get them round as quickly as possible, celebrate winning F1 as an event. Yay, we did F1. Now let's wrestle a bear to the ground. It's just, it doesn't thrill me, Sochi. Give me hope.
Well, in the spirit of this broadcast, I will first say that I totally agree with you, but I will argue the point just so that we have something to go on with. It's the best track in the world.
You went too far.
I've seen better races coming from there.
You've overcompensated, Steve.
Well, mate, I can't help it. It's an awful track. I don't know why they go there. I really don't. So I wish I could be more positive.
Any optimism on the panel from Sochi? It's fine if you haven't got any. Jules, what's your take on the track?
Kind of agree with Steve, but I think if you need to point out one cool thing about it, I think it's the pretty long straight. That is actually has a turn in it, which isn't really a turn.
Yeah.
Which, like in Baku, unfortunately, it's not as long as in Baku, but it kind of give you a chance to do a counterattack immediately after you get overtaken. If it happens in a fortunate way. And if you don't, then you get this enormous left-hander.
Turn three,
I think 2 years ago, it was Hamilton that overtook Vettel in that corner. And so I like that breaking point. But
yeah,
that's in the beginning of the lap, and then there's lots of 90-degree corners and places on the track that you never remember, and you have no clue where on the track this actually is until they come up on the straight and you think, oh, that's not a lap done.
So it's weird because it should be a good track in a way, like, and they had a clean slate. But you're right, I think Sector 1 has got a lot of interesting stuff. You've got that heavy braking zone, isn't it, where we famously saw, you know, Rosberg, you know, go off on the end there and then make his tyres last to the end of the stint. You've got Turn 3, which should be brilliant because you can take a couple of different lines through there. And then it suddenly turns into the worst parts of Singapore and Abu Dhabi. So, like, towards the end of the lap, it kind of turns into the Abu Dhabi Sector 3, and then it's got all these 90-degree stop and starts where they follow each other through. However, how many times have we thought, Matt, that we were going to a supposedly boring track, and yet this season has produced action and drama? So there's that to be hopeful for.
But one can always start with the midfield.
Yeah.
We have Renault looking really good. We're on a track that generally has low tire degradation, which might make Racing Point more competitive than they've been at the last few races.
True.
Especially with Perez being generally good at managing the tires. So it's not out of reason that we might have some excitement in the race. And we can all remember last year when Vettel got ahead of Leclerc at the start, possibly by design, and then refused to hand the position back. Ferrari undercut him, and then his car promptly stopped, bringing out the virtual safety car and handing the win to Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah.
So, the track is boring, but that doesn't mean there will be no drama. And is it later in the year than we normally go there? Am I incorrect about this?
Oh, that might be a factor. So what does that do? That means even less tire wear.
Colder can make things harder or easier, depending upon what your natural inclination is with the tires.
Yeah,
it will be better for cars following the colder it is, because it helps keep the engine temperatures down and the engines working to a higher capacity. By the same token, behind the safety car, those tires get colder quicker. And if they're not up to temperature when you hit the first turn, those braking points that you really thought you picked out well don't work the way they used to.
Awesome. So let's get some quick predictions then from our panel. Jules Sagers, thank you so much for giving up your time and joining us on this Apex podcast. You are at Jules Sagers on Twitter, which I now know is spelled S-E-E-G-E-R-S. So go and give Jules a follow. What would you predict then for the Sochi Grand Prix? Podiums or a drama? Let's have your prediction.
I predict Ferrari strategists asking their drivers what to do.
Yeah.
I predict at least one red flag because of a big crash in the massive left-hander.
Yep.
And let's be friendly towards Max Fosi. I think Max Verstappen is going to win this race to come back from a double DNF.
Oh, a Max Verstappen win. I'm actually going to predict that the cooler temperatures mean that Mercedes will have a bit more of an advantage. So we'll have the Mercedes teams all lined up at the front, but Bottas will underwhelm, having struggled early for tyre deg. That's a bold prediction, isn't it, for me, Matt? I don't know where I've got that from. That's what I'm going to do. A weak start due to increased tyre deg, shortening his first stint. I'm a genius if that comes off.
Spanners goes out on a limb, predicts Hamilton victory at Russia.
Yeah, that's sorry.
No.
Matt Trumpets at Matt P. This is the bit where I do all your plugs
the
and
introduction?
Stuff. I like to slip it in so people don't even.
I won't interrupt you. Don't worry. Go
people
ahead.
Don't even know that.
Won't interrupt
you're
you.
Doing it on purpose.
Won't interrupt you.
I know you're doing it on purpose. I'm going to edit it so it sounds like you weren't interrupting me. At Matt PT55 and his wife at A Weaver writes, That's how they make money, by writing mucky books. So go check out Amanda's books. They're good. I don't know. I haven't read the map because I would be too embarrassed. I would, every time it like described lovemaking, I would just giggle and put the book down and get all embarrassed. Naughty. right, sorry, predictions. At A Weaver writes, at MattPT55, what's your prediction for Sochi?
We have been so close for so long, but I see a track with low tire wear and a Renault, and I think it might just be time to make Steve Amey's day and say that Ricardo, and I don't know how, because obviously several drivers will have to be cleared out of the way.
Jules covered that.
But it might just be time to see that Ricardo podium come true.
Wow. What do you reckon? What do you reckon, Steve? Well, Steve, you don't do social media because you're like, ah, mate, social media. If I want to speak to someone, I'll just go over to their farm and like that. That's how you sound.
That's it. Yeah.
hello to our Australian listeners. A prediction then from you. Ricardo podium. That's what Matt says.
Oh, well, I would love to think that that is going to happen. And there is a bit of a chance. I think that the circuit will suit Renault a little. I think you're right, Spanners, in that Mercedes will ultimately win this, but I don't agree that you're right that Bottas will fail. He has quite some track record here, so yeah. I think that he will actually do reasonably well at this track. Now, and I think Jules has a point. I think Max is going to come out with, you know, the bit between his teeth. He's had two really bad races, and he wants to stand up and say, hey, listen, you know, I'm still in this. So he and both and the team are going to be trying twice as hard to make a good, you know, to give us a good race this week. So I think that it's going to be Mercedes that wins. I think it could actually be Bottas, and he's going to give Hamilton a run for his money. And I think if the gods are willing, then there'll be a yellow racing suit standing on the third step of the podium.
Yeah, we're all wishing Ocon the best. But Matt, Steve's made a really good point there, which is, you know, it's the opposite of what I said with him struggling with the tyre wear. We've seen him go well where tyres have been less of an issue. And yeah, we're sort of forgetting that. He does generally do better on these lower deg tracks.
Yeah, it takes away his Achilles heel, as it were, or his biggest weakness relative to Hamilton. The cooler temperatures, lower degradation, it allows him to, it evens him up in the other areas.
Okay, cool. Well, we've got one little award, and that is comment of the week. I'm going to jab a button. I'm not absolutely certain, but since I've been told off for making mistakes, let's hope it's okay. Yes, I've got one thing right this week. We just relax too much on new shows, get 70s racing drivers wrong, crash every single bumper, and get the driver's table wrong. But you know who's never wrong? The chat room that comes and finds us on YouTube and subscribes to us by searching Missed Apex Podcast on YouTube. They probably subscribe to our Twitter feed, Matt, at Missed Apex 50. No, not 50. That's you. At Missed Apex F1. They subscribe to us on Twitter, and that's how they know when the streams are.
No more naps for you.
No more midday naps for me. Oh my gosh. I promise. Next race review, I'm going to come back here tired and soaked in rum. And then I'll be much more on the ball. I promise. I don't even know what bit we're doing. Comment of the week, Matt. That is the award. And those people that find us on Twitter, they soon learn that the very best way to keep their finger on the pulse of all things Missed Apex is to come and join us on our Patreon Slack group and enjoy our patron-only live streams that we've been doing on Fridays before a race, which have been really, really cool fun, where people can call in on and listen to us and join the Zoom call as well, which has been great fun. And you can do that by going to patreon.com/missedapex and keep the lights on in the shed. But Matt, who is the winner of comment of the week?
Oh, so I'm not supposed to read any contenders, just give you the winner?
Look, you can't blame me for trying. I thought I could fool you into going straight to the winner. But Jules will be our judge, and he will announce the winner. So give us the contenders then.
Darren Johnston, Kamoa is a middle-class race substitute.
Kamoa. guys, yeah, I know you're like really want your cheesy chips, but I'm having this Kamoa salad, and it's really been helping with my Pilates. Yes, you're right.
Michael Diestelhoff, Renault's F1 driving force was gone with the wind, wasn't it? Would explain the push to Alpine.
Puns can't win, but thank you.
I Hammer, Haas tried clearing the snow with a Groplow.
Leave Grosjean alone! Leave Grosjean alone!
Lydia Cruz is in with Spandemonium over there regarding our recent breakdown in...
What, on the internet?
Well, just our recent breakdown in the show.
What? I got made like 4 mistakes. The show's been going for like nearly a strict hour. Leave me alone. You try podcasting sober. It's ridiculous.
Okay, maybe I should have gone with just a mic check from her instead.
Oh, fine. James Hunt. I'm not going to live that down, am I? Getting James Hunt's name wrong.
Stuart Neal is in with the statement was spanners in a red onesie, and that is enough for anyone.
The patrons bought me a Ferrari onesie, and I have only shared it with our patrons on the Patreon live stream. Oh, no, that's not true. I also have it on my Instagram. Head over and find Spanners Ready on Instagram if you want to see me spread out on a bed wearing a red Ferrari-type onesie.
And finally, we have Ewan with, no, it's an F1 podcast, also lobster racing.
Lobster racing, and they're off. The red one's in the lead, followed by the red one, and then the red one. Jules, have you heard enough? Can you give us a winner?
I like puns, and I think the Grosjean one was pretty, had some depth in it as well. So, the Gozen, Gozen one had some depth. So let's go for that one.
Go on then.
I'll spare you spanners because I actually think the one that rubbed it a bit more into your face was also good. But let's go for the Gozen Renault one.
Matt, répétez, s'il vous plaît. Perfect.
Congratulations to Michael Diestelhoff, Renault's F1 driving force was going with the wind, wasn't it? Would explain the push to Alpine.
Comment of the week.
Thank you very much for joining us. Go and follow my panel, please. Matt Trumpet, Steve Amy, and Jules Sagas on all their social media platforms. Until we see you again, work hard, be kind, and have fun. This was Missed Apex. They weren't mistakes. They were learning experiences. We've identified...
opportunities.
Those were opportunities for improvement. And in fact... I was thinking this earlier. Are we the only podcast of note? I'm going to say that we're of note. Are we the only podcast of note in F1 world that does it live and just puts that content out? Like that does it with a live chat and everything like that?
I can't think of another one.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm talking podcast. I'm sure there's the odd YouTube stream that goes on. But I think what we do here is actually it's overly complicated, and I don't think anyone should do this, Steve. I think the way we do this, we've done it because I've been too ignorant to understand the things I shouldn't do and have just done stuff. And then people like you have jumped on and gone, oh, look, what are you doing? If you're going to do it properly. Ah, God's sake, I'll do it myself. And that is how, that's the only reason the website is good is because Felix from Sweden looked at the website and he's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I don't know how to do websites.
Well, that's true, but then you've brought together a team of supposed experts, and we can do some of that stuff. Well, we like to, you know, live in a deluded world that we can do some of that stuff.
That's basically, I was too stupid to know what I couldn't do, and then all of you came and rescued me.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time.
The world's best converting checkout.
Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your $1 a month trial today at shopify.com/records.